It is the 21st century. There are too many video games. But out there, it's waiting. The best video game you've never played.
Hello and welcome to The Best Video Game You've Never Played, the podcast where I, stand-up and improv comedian Lewis Dunn, take on the suggestions of my guests to try and find the best video game that I have never played. I play their suggestion for a week, and then I come back and I say, yes, this game is fantastic! Quickly, hire skywriters to paint across the skies all of the possible praise we could possibly give this game. Or I will say no, ground all aircraft, national and international. No word must go anywhere of this video game. This week's guest is Emma Gadsden, who is one of the contributors on the Infinite Deer podcast, which for regular listeners will know I've already had Sam, who hosts that podcast, on. This is someone who appears on the show and does some of the funny nonsense D&D stuff. It's great. Go over and listen to that podcast as well if you like. But for the time being, stay here, because Emma has brought along a game in her hand and a song in her heart. What on earth could I be referencing apart from the name of the game, which you've already read because it's the title of the podcast and it's the first thing I put? Well, find out now as we talk to Emma Gadsden. Hello, Emma. How are you?
Hello, Lewis. I'm pretty good today. I'm excited to be here. Yeah.
I'm very excited to have you here because I have been playing the game that you recommended to me this week, and it is one of the more interesting games I've been asked to play on this podcast, because I'm going to level with you. I had literally never heard of this video game. And I don't mean that in the sense of like, oh, it was some obscure game in a series that I'd never paid attention to or anything like that. I had not only never heard of this game, when I looked it up, I was amazed I'd never heard of it because it looked like exactly the kind of thing I should know about and like. So I'm assuming as well that the people listening have also never heard of this video game. So please, can you introduce us to the game that you have brought along?
Of course. Okay. So my favorite video game ever currently that I have brought along is Wondersong, a little known indie game that is a music adventure platforming game in which you play as a bard who sets off on a quest to save the world and along the way sings and helps people. And as the game creator calls it, it is a game about feelings, which I feel like is just quite accurate to the game. I don't know what else to say without going into the nitty-gritty, so.
Sure thing. So I think it's fair to say up front, this game is adorable. It is one of the most, it looks adorable, it looks like sort of it's made out of craft paper. Your main character is almost always permanently affixed with a big beaming smile, huge wide innocent eyes, and he goes around a world that is like, it's wonderfully stylistic. It looks like it has very strong bold colors, and it's like, it's sort of like this 2D craft paper, I think is the best way to put it. It kind of looks like, there's another video game called Tearaway that I'm a big fan of that also looks like it's made out of handcraft paper, and it looks like a 2D version of that.
Ah, I see. So the creator actually said this is very inspired by Kirby's Epic Yarn, and it's also got that sort of Paper Mario feel as well. So I can see where you're coming from with Tearaway, which I haven't actually played, but I know what you mean by it. And I love the aesthetic. It's just so cheerful and like a child with actual skill has attacked a piece of paper and you're playing it. It's great. It's so good.
It's a game with very jolly, happy, optimistic vibes. And it's like, when I booted it up, I was like, this game is a wonderful, charming little platformer. We should say it's a little platformer. It's not a particularly difficult game. It's got like very simplistic controls. The main ones being you can move, you can jump, and you can sing. And the singing takes the form of a sort of a colour wheel that's you can control at any point with the right analog stick. And you can move it around, and you can play a whole octave of different notes to sing. And would you believe it, most of the things you do in this game involve singing at them.
It's true. Honestly, anything and everything in the game is almost interactable with singing. You can sing even within conversations with people to progress the conversations. It's honestly everywhere. You'd expect it to just be in the platforming puzzles, but no, you can sing at flowers and they change colours. You can sing at birds and they'll move along with you. I love the little details they've sort of integrated into the game when it comes with that colour wheel and how you can utilise it. It's lovely.
Yeah, just even little small details, like if you sing near flowers, their colour changes based on the note you sing. If you sing near birds or other animals, they'll sort of join in and they'll sort of enjoy it. So the game is like, it's one of the most joyful games in terms of aesthetics and in terms of presentation that I've ever seen. And it also has one of the most surprisingly dark storylines of any game that could look like this.
Yeah, honestly, it's Wondersong is the most cheerful doomsday game I've ever seen. It's about the world ending and the fact that you can't stop it and yet you still try to stop it. It's it's a thing.
Yeah, so the premise, the premise of this game is that the bard that you are playing as finds out the world is about to end. And that's it. There's nothing anyone could do about it. Except maybe if he can learn the Earth song and get everyone on the planet to sing it at the same time in perfect harmony, that might, we don't know, that might prevent the end of the world. Except it never has worked. This isn't the first time the world has ended. It has ended multiple times. And nobody has ever managed to stop it from happening. The world gets old, it gets destroyed, it gets replaced, and it's your turn.
Yeah, the goddess sort of just of this world says, hey, I'm bored of this planet now, so I'm going to sing a song and make a new one. And you can't do anything about it. And that's where the game launches from. An angel comes down and says, hey, I'm going to test you to be the hero. Oops, you're not the hero. Guess that's your problem now. And you're like, wait, I want to stop the world from ending. I live here.
That's the thing as well. It's got this, because it's such a jolly aesthetic, and the bard character in particular is sort of unshakably optimistic. He's so cheerful and he's so ready and willing to try, just to try and stop things from going wrong. Which you find out is something that as you go through the world, and you meet characters, you basically implore them. You're like, we need to do this because the world's about to end. And their reaction is usually, I don't care.
Yeah.
which is like a horror film. I think it's one of the scariest possible things you could possibly get as a reaction to being told the world is going to end. And someone going, oh, it's so, never mind.
Honestly, everyone the bard meets is so like nihilistic and cynical and pessimistic. And he's just this force of positivity trying to spread joy across the world when they're just like, oh, please stop singing, please go away, everything is horrible, the world is ending. It's such a weird collision of ideas that just works.
Yes, and I think that is one of the things I really loved about this game, is because I say, like, it has these, it has this doomsday storyline, but even in spite of the fact that, like, on paper, this storyline is kind of terrifying. It's kind of it's very similar to an actual nightmare that I've had. The characters that you meet and the way the bard interacts with them, the game slowly builds not only some actual characters that you start to care about, not only some people who are like recurring forces in the game that are really nice and that you want to learn more from, but also you start to care about trying to save this world. So ultimately, the bard's optimism rubs off on you, the player, I think.
You're absolutely right. You end up just embodying the bard. Actually, speaking of the bard, I just want to know, for my own curiosity, what did you end up calling your bard?
So, yes, there is a section in the game where you can name the bard through a very limited character selection. And I didn't know at the time that you can only name your bard a name up to 4 letters. So I managed to call my bard Louis, as in my own name,
wow,
without the S on the end.
So simple, but so pure. I appreciate that. Mine was called Pee-wee. which obviously is not my real name. My real name is Emma. But Pee-wee is the name I would have chosen if I had named myself upon birth. So there we are.
That's really nice. I mean, it very much suits the Bard.
The Bard does. He's a bit of a Pee-wee.
He's a bit of a Pee-wee. He's lovely. But look, so, right. I feel like, in a way, I'm I'm not going to make any bones about it. I really liked this game. I really, really liked it.
I'm ready to win your podcast. I'm ready.
Well, look, so here's the thing about this game that I've praised it quite a lot up to now, mostly just trying to explain it, because I feel like, in a way, me explaining it like that kind of gives you an idea of what sort of game this is. It's a platformer. It's kind of a running around and talking to people game as well.
Yes, it is. You're right. You spend half the time in one act talking to people and the other half jumping around in a spirit world. So half the game is talking to people.
And that half of the game reminded me, I mean, look, it's the story of this podcast. That part of the game kind of reminded me of early Telltale games. In that it reminded me quite a lot of, there's a game called Strong Bad's Cool Game for Attractive People. And the reason it reminded me of that game is not because they've got particular crossovers in types of gameplay or aesthetic or anything, but because the way you solve anything in that video game is you click on something once, maybe twice, and the puzzle resolves. And quite a lot of the running around talking bits in Wondersong are run around, talk to everyone once, maybe twice, and then you'll move on. And so it kind of feels like the sections of the acts that aren't the platforming sections are a bit sort of, it feels like the game is telling me a story rather than I'm engaging in some really like clever or ingenious puzzles. For example, there's one section where you have to go about town collecting members of a band. And the way that you do that is you find people, you usually sing at them, or if not at them, at someone they would like you to sing at, and then they come and join your team. And you go, okay, that's kind of what this game's going to be about, is we're going to be going to towns, solving the problems in the towns, singing at things, and then you get to go to the spirit world, where you get to do some platforming. And the platforming is okay. I mean, I don't know how you feel about it, but I feel like the platforming sometimes was quite goofy and a bit loose. Like, jumping in particular could be pretty inaccurate sometimes.
It can be, but a lot of the time you are being directed by the forces of your own voice in a certain direction. So I don't know if that necessarily matters so much. And I guess if it's goofy, that kind of fits the game's aesthetic. I did sometimes think, oh, maybe this puzzle was a little bit too long, maybe it's lasting a bit too long, but honestly, bang for my buck, I'm not going to complain too much about that. At the end of the day, it made the game longer. I really love this game. And they change, honestly, the way you interact with the core mechanic of the color wheel in each act. Everything changes a little bit. In the first Spirit World platformer, you are basically riding around on these flowers that respond to whatever note you play, and it will move in the direction you sing. In the second one, it's I think the wind spirit world, and you basically ride across wind in the direction that you sing. The next one is a water world that changes these big weird bubbles of water that you jump across and have to find the right placement for the bubble, the right shape of the bubble to continue the puzzle. It changes every time. And I never found it too static, at least. I always found, like, I was interested in the dynamic way they changed each puzzle.
And I think that is very much to the game's credit. Like, I think what I was trying to make sure that I sort of tiptoed around was the moment-to-moment running and jumping platforming is quite slow and loose. But those mechanics you talked about with the wind, the bubbles, there's another section where you have to, like, bring light using your voice. Those are all brilliant, and they're so inventive, and it's so interesting. And I love that they don't, like, they play with it, they create a level, you play it, and then they go, right, we're done with that mechanic. You're not going to see that mechanic again, and it was fun, wasn't it? And you go, yes, it was fun. I can't wait to find out what the next one is, and I know it's not going to be the same thing. And it was just such a lovely, it was a treat. It was a treat to get to those parts of the game, because I'm there going, I can't wait to find out what this section of the game is going to be about. And how this section of the game is going to be different from the last one. which is why I was so compelled to keep pushing with this game, because I knew that as I played it, there was going to be something different and something new for me to do, which is not true of most of the games I've played on this podcast. And look, so, right, I've been treading on eggshells around this, because one of the things that I really loved about Wondersong is that the story ended up blindsiding me. And as a result, I really don't want to spoil it for anyone listening to this who thinks that sounds like a really interesting game, because it is a really interesting game. And one of the things that makes it really interesting is that the game that you start playing at the start of the game does change. Not necessarily in terms of mechanics enormously, but it does become a slightly different type of game, I would say. And so I really want to put up a sort of moderate spoiler warning. I should say I haven't finished the game. I haven't got quite right to the end. I'm 2 acts away from the end of the game out of 7 acts. But there's a midpoint twist in this game that had me giggling and like applauding the game and thinking this is something really truly special. So I want to just put up a big warning now to say, if you like the sound of this game, please pause the podcast, go and play the game, and then come back and hear what we have to say about it. So there we go. That was your break. This game is like Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door, because it won't stop changing its story, and I love it. I love it so much. I was absolutely... Right, so, first 2 acts of this game, I think, are fairly straightforward.
Yeah, like, they're very... The normal hero narrative, except you're not the hero. It does follow that adventure style. It's setting up the premise of this world, how things should work for the bard if things were straightforward, which they're not. And then everything changes really around Act 3.
Act 3 is already amazing because you're on a pirate ship navigate the world by singing with your crew.
Coffee and pirates.
I loved it. I loved it so much. It was so adorable and funny. And yeah, I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was it was a real highlight. And I still think just navigating the map with the pirate ship where you navigate by sea shanty.
Oh, yes.
I thought was adorable. But you then find out, so there's a hint at it in the chapter where they go, I can't think of the word for it now, like a fortune teller?
Yeah, there's like an oracle lady that lives in the sort of archipelago area of the world. Cassiopeia or something, whatever her name is.
She basically reads your fate to see if you're the hero. And she says you're not the hero. And not only are you not the hero, fate has no expectations of you whatsoever. There's no prophecy about you at all. Which I thought was hilarious. I just love this idea that he's just like, fate literally overlooked you and didn't even consider that you were something that needed to have a prophecy about you.
Yes.
And then you get to actually meet who the hero of the game is. And you get to play as them for a bit. And I loved this so much. Mostly because when you get to play as the hero in the game, suddenly the game starts unlocking achievements.
Yes, so many achievements when you're using your lightning bolt power and just like times 50 whatever achievements are going off every other second. And you're like, what's happening?
It's just wild. The best, because... The game agrees that they're the hero and the bard isn't. The actual game that you're playing is like, there's no achievements for the bard because the bard doesn't achieve anything. They're not the hero. They can't unlock achievements.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. At every point in this game, it is specifically telling you, you are not the hero. Even from the very beginning, you wake up in a dream sequence and like this messenger of the goddess comes down and is like, hold this sword, and you're dragging the sword and you can barely lift it because you are not the hero. And then she's just like, right, yeah, I tried it, but you're not working out. You're not the person I'm looking for. Good luck anyway. The world's ending, and at every turn that is what you are encountering in this game, and it's just a wonderful thing to sort of oppose within this joyful narrative.
And it's great because the hero's quest is to end the universe. Mm-hmm. The hero is working on killing the overseers of the universe so the universe can recycle and reset. So it's not just that you're playing as a lovely bard who sort of got mixed up in something they don't understand. You are the antagonist of fate. your job is to thwart destiny and to defeat the hero because you want to save the world, even though that's not the cosmic order of things. And that to me is just like, I love that. I love that kind of storytelling. The idea that you are not the hero. It kind of like, I realize that the hero's quest is basically Shadow of the Colossus.
It is. It honestly is. I didn't think about that, but now that you mention it, I will never see this game quite the same again.
Yeah, and then Act 4 of this game, after you learn about the hero and what their fate is, Act 4 of this game is your character is depressed.
Oh yeah, I call it the Depression Act. It is the Depression Act.
Yeah, and you basically have to be talked back into picking up the game's main quest again, because it seems like all is lost, and it's like there's no point in you trying. You can't defeat the hero. Mm. You can sing. All you can do is sing.
As is with any life's endeavor, you try something and then you realize you can't do it, so you go back to your mum's house and you sit there and mope. So that's basically what happens in Act 4. And it's also weirdly about like consumerism and stuff and how it's ruining a town. And I'm like, wow, this is such a dark act. and yet you pick yourself back up.
Yes. And it reminded me a lot of, this is the thing, this game for me is just a huge pot of references to other games I love. It reminded me a lot of a video game called Little Inferno.
Oh, yes, yes. I see what you mean.
There's a industrial town that's being snowed on, and you just burn coal to like keep the factory going. Like, it was very similar aesthetic and music and so on. But again, that chapter I had some issues with, because I felt in that chapter quite a lot of the puzzles were quite time consuming and like not massively fun, but I thought they worked for the purpose of the aesthetic of that act. And I was kind of like, you know what, I'd rather you were creative and took a risk with this act rather than just like make it the same as all the previous acts.
Yeah, I suppose they would be time consuming in the sense that it is a chapter about time management and the fact you have to sit on a bench and wait for time to pass. And when you actually go into the spirit world section of the game, it's all about reversing time or speeding up time or slowing down time or pausing time. So I guess that could work to, what's the opposite of benefit? It's con. It's
detriment.
Detriment, that's the word. I guess in that sense it could. But I did like how quirky it was. I enjoyed that it was quite a far out there chapter.
Well, again, this is the thing. The game that kept coming to mind to me was Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door. Because the thing about that game is every chapter of that game is a different enclosed little story. And it's an unusual, very un-Mario-ish story. And I feel like this game, even though it doesn't have the trappings of being a Mario game, spent the first three chapters going, you know what game this is, you know what game this is. No, it's not. It's not that game. We tricked you. We made you think that this game was going to be like all sort of adventures of this type. And then actually what we did was we slammed the protagonist to a complete halt, made them depressed, and sent them back to their hometown, which is the opposite of an adventure.
Yeah, so true.
And again, there's like literal comparisons to each chapter in Paper Mario that I could make, but I don't want to do that because that would also require that you play Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door.
Yeah, I feel like I have to go into a deep dive into Paper Mario now. Like, I don't know enough.
Weirdly, just Thousand Year Door. That's the only one that's actually ever managed to pull it off. But with that in mind as well, about the way that this game is very unusual and subversive, but despite that, it's very thematically tight. When I thought about what the sort of overarching plot of the game is that basically the universe has gone wrong. Like, over time, the universe becomes full of evil and the overseers become corrupt. And as a result, they have to destroy everything and start again. And you realize that the game is full of people accepting a fate that they're not trying to change. So each chapter has some theme at its core, where people are basically unwilling to change or unwilling to ask for change, and as a result, they're suffering. So in Chapter 4, there's this factory that basically dominates the town. Everyone's either employed by the factory or like gets business because of the people who work at the factory. And then eventually you find out the way to shut down the factory is to just go and ask the person who runs it.
Yeah, you go and speak to Evil Santa, aka the Baron, and you're just like, dude, did you intend to make a factory that runs quite like this? And he's like, you know what, maybe not. Maybe that wasn't my intention. I'm gonna I'm going to shut down the factory and take a holiday. And that's the end of that. And I love it. Every solution in this game, which is quite wonderful, is non-violent. I do enjoy that in a video game because it's not normally the way of things. Normally it's very much smash this, win the game. And when you hear the creator talk about it, he is very much of the opinion that non-violent solutions are a really cool way of navigating the world, and you see that sort of pacifism appear within the mechanics of this game. The bard is continually presented with conflict and yet decides to resolve it by just speaking or singing or dancing. Even he can dance, which is fun.
Well, the dancing is a lovely a little addition. I don't think that, as far as I could tell, the dancing doesn't actually change anything in the game. It's not like a booster or bonus.
Except it looks super pretty and you can do it while you're talking to people in the most hilarious ways. And that's all it does.
Yes, and I also have been whizzing across doing a ballerina pirouette across landscapes because I think it's as fast as the walking and I quite like
And it makes a whooshing noise as you go around, if you've noticed.
Yes, it does. It's adorable. And like, this is the thing. I think there's so much to be admired about this game. The fact you pointed out it's non-violent in terms of the character solutions. It's not just that it's non-violent. It's that there are characters around you who want to use violence, who are actively saying, we should use violence right now to solve this problem. And the bard character is so, so optimistic and so like brilliantly naive that they always go, no, I don't think we need to be violent. I think we can save the day without doing that. And he's always right. He always figures something out. He always finds a way to get around the problem. And that is brilliant because in contrast, when you play as the hero, they only fight. They only use violence. And their only solution is to destroy everything. And you begin to realize that there's this wonderful contrast in like the hero of the video game that you should be playing is not handling problems very well.
Yeah,
and isn't
you're right.
Solving conflict.
It makes you think about every other game you've played and the fact that they're so quick to grab their sword and you're like, hang on, if the game had given me some other interesting, fun way to resolve this, would I have taken that route? You know? And that is what I really enjoy about Wondersong. Granted, I cannot whack things with a sword if I chose to in this game, but it does make me think, at least. And I really enjoy that. It's something special about this game.
Yeah, it really is. And it's also a triumph because, quite frankly, it's quite hard to make video games where you solve things through non-violent means and not have it be quite boring. It is genuine. Like, for all the criticism we're having of going, like, video games should be less violent and violence in video games is overdone and overwrought. Most video games are violent because that tends to be the fun mechanic, or someone years ago figured out a great mechanic for violence, and that's that.
Little known fact, violence is fun. Said it here first.
But look, it's just I really want to I know that my job here is to be critical of the game, and there are things to be critical about, and I think I've brought them up, but I just really like this game. It's so cheerful, it's optimistic. It made me feel quite emotional at points, and it made me feel emotional in a way not like in a sort of The Last of Us kind of way where it's sort of like brutal and sad and, you know, like, you know, how can humans persist in the face of great suffering? It made me emotional because I couldn't believe how optimistic the game was and how, like, how the game was like, no, we can do better. We can be better than this and we can triumph over these terrible things in our lives. And I was like, yeah, we can. I love this game.
It honestly encourages you, this game, I think, to just sort of enjoy little things. It's weird. I don't want to talk so pretentiously about a game, but it's weirdly not pretentious for how much it makes me feel like it should be. There's a lot of small things about it that just make me happy about humanity and stuff, and that just feels so extra that I'm saying that, but that's sort of what the game is about. Like, the creator went on this big bike ride across the US for 5 months and came back feeling like, oh, everyone really helped me on that bike ride, everyone was so nice, I'm gonna make a video game that encompasses all my feelings about that. And I guess you can really sort of feel that voice coming through, that sort of positivity he felt on that journey that he put into this game, and it's just so lovely. It's so lyrical.
I mean, that's the thing, most of the time in the game, if you ask for help, you get it. Like, maybe not always immediately, maybe not without some sort of like
pestering,
like quest to Yeah, yeah, not without some pestering or you have to go and find something or do someone a favour. But people help you throughout the whole game. And you're there's a character that follows you. There's a witch called Miriam who basically assumes that no one will help you and that everything, you know, you're going to have to take everything by force or you're going to have to take everything by... you know, she constantly offers to use her magic to blast monsters. And you're like, no, let's talk to the monsters. And she's like, fine, you try and talk to the monsters. And when that doesn't work, I'll blast them with magic. She's a great character as well, because you see how she goes from being the ultimate cynic into kind of getting behind the bard a bit more. And kind of like, she's got a bit of a front. She's got a bit of a hard shell in terms of like, she doesn't want to admit that the bard is usually right. But she's such a lovely character to have along on the quest, because in a way it means that she can take the negative cynical attitude away from the player and let you know, give the player that opportunity of going, I'm going to show Miriam that we don't need to blast this yeti and that actually we can save them and just by singing, and then it works and you're right and it's lovely.
Yeah, honestly, I feel like Miriam and the bard's relationship is almost one of the most integral pieces to the game for making it work in terms of like emotional continuity. It's very special seeing how the bard is the ultimate force of positivity and she's the ultimate force of negativity, and they sort of learn from each other. And have you got to the bit where Miriam has a sort of existential crisis when she's dancing in the Witch City? You have got to that bit where she's sort of asking the bard, how are you always so happy? And the bard's like, I don't know, I guess it's easy. And then they talk about it a bit more and the bard is like, you know what, maybe it's not that easy. Maybe I'm trying really hard all the time. And they sort of learn from each other and feel out each other's perspectives. And by the end of the game, they're vibing, they're best friends. It's great.
They both have this insecurity that like, both of them assume fate has nothing in store for them. Both of them constantly talk about this idea, like Miriam in particular feels very insecure about the idea that, you know, she thought she'd be the hero on the quest trying to save the day, but the bard's taking more of a lead. And then the bard's like, well, I'm not meant to be doing this at all, so I don't know why you're so down on the fact that I've been taking the lead on this. But also, she talks about this idea of like, there's a really touching bit where she says, I went to this city of witches and I didn't fit in there. And when I was living in my hometown with my grandma, I was the only witch, so I didn't fit in there. So I don't really fit in anywhere. And I don't know who I'm supposed to be. And the bard sort of makes this point of going, well, I don't fit in anywhere either. Everywhere I've been, people have told me no or said I couldn't do something. And instead, I just persist. I just don't take no for an answer. And I in a good way, I should say.
In a good way, not like... in a way where he's like making people too uncomfortable.
Yes, yeah. It's more that he will always try and find out what that person wants and then solve it and help them.
Yeah.
And the game is full of these themes of like, people in the game keep accepting that things have to be a certain way, and the bard keeps turning up and saying, no, they don't. And this extends through small interactions like the pirates miss the mermaids, but they assume the mermaids are never coming back, so they never bothered to try and find them, to very large scale things like there's a war chapter. There's a chapter where you go to two different cities that are at war with each other, and both sides just assume the war has to happen and that the war is sort of the fate of these two cities and there's nothing they can do about it. And it takes basically the bard visiting both, and there's a whole storyline there that I don't want to spoil.
Well, yeah, let's not, but it involves dead people and possession and all those good things, and that's all I will say.
Yeah. And it's great, and it's a really interesting, it's interesting aesthetically and it's interesting thematically. But then it leads to a moment where there's like a musical number that's like an anti-war moment in the game, as it were, where he sings with the voice of the sun and the moon and all the people. And it's a beautiful climactic moment of this chapter. And I'm just there genuinely touched, and I'm like, this game constantly takes these smaller premises of like, people are trapped in situations they assume they have to be trapped in and they don't try and change it. And it's also blown it up to right from the start going, by the way, that's the fate of the universe. The universe is going to end and everyone's just accepted that that's how it has to be.
Yeah, it goes from this sort of microscopic level, and then when you pull out a bit, you're like, oh, wait, this is everything.
It's, yeah.
it's sort of... It's lovely, though, how the bard still focuses on every person's problem who he comes across, even though he really should be thinking about the fate of the world. He will always stop and say, hang on, Miriam, let's chill here for a second. I've got to put a band together and make this town happy. I don't have time to get the song yet. And somehow yet it still works out in the bard's favour because he is being rewarded for being just a good person. And I like that the game rewards that. It feels like good positive reinforcement. It's what I need. Is.
And it's very funny about that as well. Like that section in particular you mentioned when you put the band together, you're supposed to be trying to find out what the song is to unlock the spirit world in that part of the game. And instead the bard gets distracted by putting a band together because some random stranger asked him to do it.
Yeah.
And then as a result of that, he does learn the song. And even he's like, I can't believe I learned the song. I wasn't even trying. And Miriam, who's on your quest with you, is like, I hate you. I hate that you didn't even try looking for it and landed in your lap. That's so irritating. And the game's really funny. Like I love the section where you have to sabotage the factory. As soon as you learn that your quest is that you need to sabotage the factory, every single time you talk to anybody in the town, you open with, do you want to destroy the factory?
yeah, you do. It's great. And there are so many NPCs there. So if you are not thinking about who actually is a good tactical person to pick to sabotage the factory with you to be part of your infiltration squad, you will just go around and ask absolutely everyone. I can't remember if you can ask your mother to sabotage the factory or not, but I have a feeling you can.
You absolutely can. You absolutely can ask your mum to help you sabotage the factory. And she just goes, oh, that sounds like a laugh, but I'm too old, dear. I can't do it now. That's also one of the most, like, in terms of heartbreaking emotional moments in the game. There's a moment where you as you say, you move back with your mum and you go down the stairs and the bard's sad now, which is unthinkable because nothing could make this guy sad before, but he's sad now and he goes to see his mum and his mum says, oh, you should smile more, you know, get a smile on your face and you'll feel better. And he forces a smile, and then I noticed every time I went back in front of my mum, the character would force a smile.
Yeah.
And it's just like, first of all, the detail on that, beautiful. But also, like, it communicates just in an image immediately how the character's feeling and how they're sort of at a loss for...
Yeah, his tight little smile where he's only doing it just because his mum's told him to. When you know this is the kind of character who just wears their feelings on their sleeve, it's wonderful how much attention the creators put into doing the designs of the bard's facial expressions in particular. They change so regularly with every emotion the bard is feeling. And even stuff like the beat of the game, the musical beat, you notice that everything is bopping in time to the music that's playing. Even the bard, his just legs are moving. That attention to detail, it all serves this greater continuity, this greater narrative. It's intricate.
Yes, it very much is. And I think, so, look, I've been heaping praise and praise on this game.
Oh yeah, please rip it apart.
No, here's the thing. This is, I've said the platform is a little bit janky at points. That was only really a problem in one section of the game where I had to do some quite tight platforming and the game wasn't quite responsive enough and I was like, this is quite irritating. But it was fine, I got over it. It wasn't too big an issue. Here is my actual biggest criticism of the game, and it is quite a big one, which is that I like the singing mechanic, but boy is it unreliable. Because that analog control is not the most accurate. And as a result, there are certain sections in the game where you need to sing specific song moments. So there's moments where you have to sing what the game calls Overseer songs. And it kind of goes into almost a Dance Dance Revolution or Guitar Hero style, like, rhythm game section. Except the game knows that its controls are quite loose, so you don't have to be particularly good at these sections to progress through them. However, what you do end up doing is hearing something that is definitely not a song as you try and sing using this very loose joystick mechanic.
Yes. And it's, you say joystick, which is interesting to me because I say a mouse. So I'm wondering how have you been playing Wonder Song?
So I got it on PC. I got it on Steam, and I've been using a DualShock 4 And I've been making that, tricking the computer into thinking that's an Xbox 360 controller for various annoying reasons to do with Steam's controller thing not being as good as advertised. But I use that because I was like, it's a platformer, and to my mind, a platformer is something you play with a controller. One thing that is good about the controller is the D-pad also doubles up, and that's better at quicker, more precise inputs. But it's not good at diagonals. So the game kind of accommodates for this. It kind of knows that when you get to singing those bits, you aren't going to hit it accurately, mostly because you'll jump from one side of the wheel to the other, and so the natural instinct is to whip the joystick around to the other side rather than going from like left to right directly. And so am I going to have to sing to communicate this?
I want you to, yes.
Rather than jumping directly from one note to another, like from going like, you go like, and this sort of ruins anything that you're trying to actually sing. So there are moments, for example, where you have to compose songs for certain people. So there's like a band that needs you to compose a song, or there's a sweet shop that wants you to write a jingle. And I never successfully created anything that remotely sounded like music during these bits.
I see. Okay, so I haven't actually played it with a controller. I do not know what an analog would feel like in terms of this game. I nearly did pick up my Switch and think, okay, I'm going to play my Switch copy just to see what this feels like. But as of yet, I have still been using the mouse. You also actually have the opportunity, if you're doing keyboard and mouse, to use 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on and so forth to do it. But that just sounds confusing. Then I'd have to learn numbers in comparison to notes and like colors. I can't do that. So I just use the mouse to drag it around. And that's easy enough. Mm. But now that you mention its compatibility with an analog stick, yeah, I wouldn't know about that. So perhaps you were right. Perhaps it is just not suited to that at all.
It feels like it's made for that because they've deliberately made it a wheel.
That's true.
It feels like that's what it was designed to do. And look, when I like disciplined myself with it and I started using the analog stick more like as a way to select a direction rather than whipping it around in an analog way, I could get the songs to sound better. But I could never get like the tempo correct, for example. So there's some moments in the game where there's quite an emotive use of music, and the music comes through really strongly, and it's like it's on you to progress the song because you have to literally sing the notes in terms of like you're responsible as the player. But the game will wait for you to hit the note. It won't like tell you the timing's wrong. It won't force you to get the timing right. But as a result, these songs sound really weird.
Yeah, sometimes it does not suit the emotional outburst the game is trying to give when you're doing a song and you just absolutely ruin it. Because you're just hitting random notes if you have like a little hand spasm or something. But at least the game doesn't really punish you. It sets like challenges that you have to progress beyond to get further into the game. But there is a lack of failure. If you accidentally flick off into another note for a second, but you still hit every other note you're meant to, it's not going to penalize you, which I enjoy.
Yeah.
It makes it easy. Anyone can play it.
Yes. And I have to say as well, one of the things I found out when doing a bit of outside research is that the game's accessibility was a big point of design for them. So we've described the music wheel as a color wheel, and it is a color wheel, but also there's a colorblind mode for people who need that. It's also designed so that if you have a hearing impairment, you can still play the game because it also uses direction, it also uses color. Everything about the wheel is designed so that it's accessible to players. And also the game's difficulty is the right side of easy. It's not so easy that it's a snooze fest and that you're breezing through it without any trial, but it's easy enough that I never felt properly frustrated with any of the platforming sections outside of one where it was because the jumping was a bit janky. And it's to the game's credit, I really like that they made that decision. I like that this game isn't incredibly hard, that it isn't, you know, a Super Meat Boy or some other ridiculously hard 2D platformer. It's a game that's like, it wants you to finish it. It wants you to play it. It's trying to make the adventure interesting, but it's not trying to put hard barriers in front of you.
Yeah, you're right, because it's really being, I won't say completely carried by music and story and aesthetics, but that is a large reason to why someone might be very gripped by this game. And if suddenly the platforming puzzles were so hard, I would just give up. I would be like, you know what? This, I'm sure the story's great, but I can't get beyond this weird water level and all these bubbles that keep going on forever. And I actually have a friend who gave up there, so maybe that's a difficult one. I'm not sure.
Okay. It was a trickier section, but I found it was... I like that the game isn't... Like, the first couple levels, I was like, I'm not sure you can fail in this game. I'm not sure that, like, I'm ever going to, like, lose a life, as it were, in inverted commas. And then as I got further in, that did start to happen. But at a rate... I mean, for one thing, the checkpointing in this game is wonderfully, like, liberal. Like, it's constantly checkpointing you through every single section. Any like, section that I completed, I was never expected to repeat because I failed the next section. Which is good, because I'm currently playing a different video game off my own back, which is not as good at checkpointing, and as a result I have to repeat a lot of tedious actions. But it just... Look, normally, one of the problems I have on this podcast is that if I get given a game I really like, I struggle to make it last an hour, because I just want to say I like it, and that's that. And I feel like that's what's happened here. I just really like this game. I just really like it.
I do not begrudge you that. I honestly, if I hadn't have been told, you're going to be on a podcast and you have to talk about this, I would just tell people, I really like this game and you should play it, which I have done. So I'm very happy I got to ramble about this with you for as long as we have already.
Yeah. I mean, look, so here's the thing. I'm going to say one more thing that's not necessarily about, like, playing the game itself, but I'm going to say something now. I did some research around Wonder Song because I was playing it and obviously doing this podcast, and I was like, why have I never heard of this game? This game is so lovely. There's so many things about it that I love, and there's so many things about it that I recognize in other games that other people love. Why have I not heard of Wonder Song? And I found out the reason that I've not heard of Wonder Song is because it came out in 2018, which was the best year for video games in the whole decade. Without question, 2018 has too many great video games. 2018 is also the year Return of the Obra Dinn came out, which is currently this podcast's, like, most vaunted game. I love Return of the Obra Dinn, and this came out the same year as it. So I'm kind of not surprised now that I've never heard of it, because I think in any other year, this game, if it was released in just that right window when there's nothing else really out and video game critics and journalism are looking for something to talk about because there's not much on, it definitely would have the cult following it deserves. But instead, it came out the year that there were more good video games than the rest of the decade put together.
You're right. It was too good a year, if anything, for this game, because this game is absolutely joyful and beautiful, and yet there are so many other good games in 2018, and you look on Steam, overwhelmingly positive reviews, but not many people have actually seen it on Steam. And it was kickstarted, it got like nearly $22,000 and nearly like 1,000 people backing it, but yet it's just almost unheard of.
That's insanely modest for how good this game is.
Mm.
Like, the idea that this game... I'm assuming they might well have got funding from elsewhere. I don't want to assume that $22,000 is the total budget. But the idea that it was, like, 1,000 people on Kickstarter to help make this game exist, I'm like, this game... I keep comparing it to Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door. In my eyes, it's as good as that game. In some ways, it's better than that game. And that game is widely considered one of the best cult hits of its time. And obviously the reason it's more Mario's more popular is because it has Mario on it. But if you love that kind of game, like, this game is in a way a better follow-up to that than that series ever got. And I don't know. I really love this game. But now I have to ask that question, which is this the best video game I've never played? And now we're in difficult territory, because for this to be the best video game I've never played within this collection of podcasts that I'm doing, I have to compare it to Return of the Obra Dinn, which came out the same year. So they are. And this is the thing, Return of the Obra Dinn historically won this fight. The indie game of 2018 that is well recorded and loved is Return of the Obra Dinn. It's the one, like, in the indie spotlight that got the attention.
Hey, but don't you just love an underdog? Don't you just really love an underdog that maybe goes unnoticed, like the bard, that is not dictated by fate to win and yet does anyway? Don't you just love that kind of story?
Here's the thing. I really do love an underdog. And this game has absolutely softened my heart to the idea that it's an underdog. Because Return of the Obra Dinn was made by somebody who did get a lot of attention for their previous game and was like a known keep-an-eye-on-them developer. But I went into Wundersong having literally never even heard of it. And I don't think a video game has made me smile more this year than Wundersong. So because of that, for that reason, I'm going to say Wundersong is the best video game I've never played. I absolutely love it. Even its flaws are charming. And even in the sections where its flaws are more prominent, I think, you know what? It was better that you tried and you had something interesting to do than you just played it safe. So yes, Wundersong right now is the best video game I've never played.
Oh, yay! I've got a big bard smile right now. You liked my favourite video game. This is great.
I feel like I've discovered something really special with Wundersong. And isn't it nice in a way? And like you must be feeling this right now. Isn't it nice to know that you know about something really good that other people don't know about, so that you can be like, have you played this?
Yeah, it's almost like a cult, but in like a wholesome way. It's great. I found it on Steam Labs one day because I was like, ooh, Steam Labs, what is this? And I just jiggled around on Steam using that weird mechanic they have, and I found it, and I was like, I guess I'll buy it. And best decision of my life, I guess. Well, not life, dramatic, but a pretty good one.
Like, I feel like I could, like, I've been critical during the podcast. I could be evangelic about this game. I really could. I could happily tell almost anybody to play this video game and really sincerely mean it. And like, it's sort of, there's a series of games that I quite like that sort of have like, there's a fun idea of like, they're subversive in some way, or there's some hidden element to them that makes them more than what they are. So this is the thing, I don't necessarily want to say any of the games that fulfill this genre because it kind of ruins their trick. I guess the most famous example is a game called Frog Fractions, which is purportedly a game about you're a frog and you're solving fractions, and it's an edutainment game. And the thing that's fun about it is it's not. Stuff changes. It's interesting. If you haven't played Frog Fractions, it's free on Steam. Go have a look at it. It's a good hour of fun. This game is that, but it also isn't that. It's subversive, but it doesn't destroy what it's about. It doesn't destroy its concept for the sake of being subversive. It's funny, but it takes its characters seriously. It's meta, but it doesn't, it's not overly meta in a way that ruins like the world building. It's just a phenomenal piece of writing, and it's also not a book, which is something that has come up a lot in the podcast, where I've gone, this game's good, but it's a book. This game's good, and it's not a book, and it couldn't be a book, and it wouldn't work as well if it was a book. So congratulations, yeah. Well done.
Thank you. I'm glad I brought this to you. Almost I was thinking, I'm not bold enough to suggest something like Long Live the Queen, or even Blazeball. Blazeball, which Sam told me is not a game. I think it's a game. Everyone look up Blazeball. But I'm glad I brought Wundersong to the table. I hope someone can try and beat it, because if so, I will play that game.
I loved this game. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Emma.
Of course, thank you for inviting me. Had a great time.
That was Emma. A huge thanks to her for coming onto the show. I had a really great time talking to her about this game. I had a really great time with this game. It's so nice to have another game legitimately get the title of the best video game you've never played, and I've just really sincerely loved it. I should also say, now of recording this a few weeks later, I did finish Wundersong. I did love the ending. I thought the game was a wonderful, heartwarming, unique adventure that I feel like I could happily recommend to anybody who is in the market for that kind of a video game. Next week, I'm going to have my final guest who's coming on to bring a suggestion of the video games. From that point onwards, I'm going to be doing a series of return episodes where some guests are going to be coming back, and they're going to be coming back with games that I gave to them, and then they're going to come back to me and say whether or not they enjoyed it. And then there might be a bit of a gap. If you listen to future episodes, I should have a better idea of what's going on. But I'm essentially going to put this season to rest after those episodes. And we're going to take a little time because I'm going to be honest with you. Games have come out that I actually want to play. And I spend all my time playing the games for this podcast instead. And I want to take a little bit of a time to myself to actually go and enjoy video games that I love. I know I'm eating into the games I could potentially be being recommended, but other people have to play them first. And I'm pretty sure that I am the person who is most up to date with video games that I know. If you've been enjoying the podcast, please leave it a review, subscribe, go on the iTunes, go on the YouTube, go on the Twitter. You know, all those things made by multinational companies that determine whether or not independent people can have either a career or be dragged in the mud forever and all time. But please do let us know if you're enjoying the podcast. As I say, we're coming to the end of the first organized series of this. I would love to continue to make more of these, and I'd love to get on more guests from more interesting backgrounds as well. Not to suggest that the people in the show haven't had interesting backgrounds, but I want more of those backgrounds that are interesting. I want to go out and find people who can recommend to me games I've never heard of on platforms I've never touched. I'd love to get this show into a position whereby we're talking about genuinely obscure video games, like Wondersong, which I thought was a genuinely unheard of game that I'd never spotted before. Whereas I do kind of want to get away from, like it was pointed out to me today, I've technically never played some of the Grand Theft Auto games, and there's a little part of me that feels a little bit heartbroken about the idea that this podcast that's meant to be celebrating obscure video, someone could trick me into playing Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. Do you really think we need a reassessment of Grand Theft Auto San Andreas? I don't. I think the people who like that game know they like that game. I don't think I'm one of the people who would like that game. I didn't like Grand Theft Auto 5, and that's meant to be the best one. Well, probably not. Argue about which one's the best Grand Theft Auto. Anyway, a huge thanks to Emma. Thank you for listening. Stay safe.